Good morning. This is Carol Spinney.
Welcome to Too Much Scrolling for October 22nd, 2019. I'm Steve Fodor.
And I'm Chip Hessenflo.
You're just a couple of guys.
Sunny Chip Hessenflo. Sunburned Chip Hessenflo.
Yeah. We're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. If you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information. Chip, you are sunburned because you just got back from Batu.
I'm going to leave some skin for you today as I peel it. Like a snake, I'm just going to leave a whole skin.
So, tell me, how was Batu? Because I'm not jealous at all that you got to go to Galaxy's Edge before me.
So, no one knows what Galaxy's Edge is, Steve.
No, no one's ever heard of it. No one's ever been around me and heard me talk about it. Go on.
So, if you're in Orlando, Florida, there is a place called Disney.
Mm-hmm.
And there are multiple parks you can choose to go to, and one of them is Disney's Hollywood. And Disney's Hollywood has basically become Star Wars land.
Yes.
And so when you talk about this place that, you know, is from a different galaxy, Steve.
Far, far away.
A far, far away galaxy. The park has just opened up this year, just a few months ago.
Really, really recently. Yeah, you're amongst the very few people who have actually seen this attraction in Florida.
That's right. And it is an enjoyable place. For and you know, it's, you have to recognize it's not complete yet. There's part of the park that is open, and certainly this is part of what will become Star Wars land. But we got to ride, I got to ride Smuggler's Run, which is the, I got to fly the Millennium Falcon, Steve. And that is a virtual reality. What is it? It's like Avatar. It's, you're basically going through a cartoon.
Yeah, I think it's virtual reality.
There you go. You go and you complete a Smuggler's Run, Steve. And then I got to have some blue milk. The green milk was there.
And gone.
And, then you get to see, you know, all the cast. I mean, Chewbacca's around there.
Yeah.
Darth Vader certainly makes his presence known.
A lot of stormtroopers.
Stormtroopers harassing people.
Yes.
They're harassing people, Steve. They may say something to you and then, and, you know, have to guard you for a little while. But
keeping
you,
order in the universe.
But you can escape. You can escape.
Okay.
And then there's lots of food, and everything is, it really is, from the restrooms to the eating places, the restaurants. Very much Star Wars theme. So when you buy the soft drinks and water and stuff like that, they have special
vocabulary.
Absolutely. And everything, you know, everything's credits, Steve.
Everything's credits. And if you wanted to pay with your phone, they'd tell you to put your pad there to pay.
Exactly.
Uh-huh. Did they have the names of the foods in alien language, or were they, you know, did they call it chicken?
Well, they use a special font.
Okay.
So, you know, when you look, I'm going to use Coca-Cola as an example because we all know what Coca-Cola's, you know, calligraphy looks like.
Uh-huh.
You can tell it's Coca-Cola. They've got the colors there. But, you know, some artists out there created some kind of font that makes it look like it's, you know.
Like it's in Arabesh. Yeah.
Like in some place that's not, you know.
A galaxy far, far away.
It is. Probably the most touching scene I saw was there are very few humans walking around as characters. I mean, they've got the cast members who are helping you. But Rey is one of the characters that's there. So, you know, Stormtroopers, you can't see who their face is or anything like Chewbacca, you can't see the face. BB-8, you can't see
who's
the face.
In there.
Yeah, exactly. So, but Rey is a person. She was working on an X-Wing.
Mm-hmm.
She was doing some repairs, Steve, and then she left her stage and came down, and some little girl wanted to hug her. And when I say wanted to hug her, she just grabbed hold of her, and when I said little girl, probably 3-year-old, 4-year-old, grabbed Rey around the neck and just held and held and held and would not let her go. And you had all the Disney photographers around taking pictures, and Mom and Dad were sitting there beaming. But if you ever wanted to know why Disney has worked so hard to put girls in, or women, into these stories, That was a good point, because that little girl, I mean, I don't know if it was 5 minutes. It was just hug, 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 hug.
She was enthralled by the idea of actually meeting Rey.
And the actor who's playing Rey was, I mean, you know, just sort of incredibly touched by this. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, you're expecting maybe a hug or a high five or something like that. But, you know, what do you do with someone who's having such an emotional moment yeah. right there? And that was the other thing that you got there. The love of Star Wars was very, very high.
Star Wars, Chip. Star Wars!
Yes, yes. it was very, very high there. And the people who were there were eating it up. They were absolutely loving this place. And once again, I need to emphasize that if you go, you know, you've got things to do there, but we're really at the beginning. 3 or 4 years from now, it's yeah. going to be
even more special.
Oh, I bet we have maybe a third of it done. I don't even know if it's a third.
Wow.
So I would say that, you know, it's going to get pretty amazing. Hollywood Land for Disney Park is kind of the forgotten parks, Toy mm-hmm. Story, and got Indiana Jones there and stuff. This is very much going to be, let's celebrate Star Wars. And at the end of the day, you can stand out and they do a Star Wars celebration to close down the park
yeah.
where it's all videos. Oh, man. And let's just say that it is a very emotional moment for a lot of people. The gentleman standing next to me
yeah.
was there at May the 4th. And he goes, oh, you think the crowd is big now? He goes, we couldn't even stand. And he goes, this is such a great thing. But anyway, he decided he was going to come back and stand next to me as we were watching
yeah.
this. Oh, yes. I'm telling you that you see what Disney is doing with Star Wars. And we talked about brand care
mm-hmm.
when Disney bought Star Wars. Now, they certainly have made some interesting decisions on the stories and the movies. But there's no doubt that they have taken a lot of care with this property, and this Star Wars area, Galaxy's Edge, is going to be something that a lot of people will enjoy. Absolutely.
I feel like I just lost a lot of money because I feel like I need to go there, and like I need to go there now.
A pilgrimage.
Like I am missing out on not being there, even though it's not up to speed yet. They're slowly getting there. You said that the only ride that was available was the Smuggler's Run.
Yeah, really, Smuggler's Run.
Yeah,
and you know, there's Star Tours that's there also, okay. and but you know, the sets that they've put together, there's things going on there. All around you.
Mm-hmm.
You can get in line and you can, there's a film that they're running. Basically, it talks a little bit about how they got females involved in Star Wars, which was a big step, because if you're going to build a park, you've got to appeal to more than, you know, young boys.
Just the 40-year-old balding men who want to go there so badly because you're talking about it right now. Yeah,
okay.
Go on.
Okay. and so they had to broaden the scope sure. of the property. But afterwards, you can go and you get to see a lot of the models they used. And then you get to go meet the characters. I think my favorite character to meet was Chewbacca,
mm-hmm.
which is a full-size...
big Wookiee.
A Bigfoot, a Sasquatch.
Walking carpet.
Yes, exactly, fuzzball. anyway, I'm standing next to, you know, I'm a pretty big guy,
yeah.
and yeah, he's a little taller than I am.
Yeah?
He didn't rip my arms off, Steve.
That's good. You didn't make you let the Wookiee win. That's the policy.
That's the first rule. And then I also got to meet an Anakin Skywalker.
Okay.
And he was dressed in this, he was trying to recruit me to the dark side, Steve. And as I said, not today, Satan. You know.
Nice. This sounds like an experience and a half. I look forward to the moment when my friends and family come together and give me money to go see Star Wars Land, because I'm excited. The hotel isn't open yet. The full LARPing hotel where you are going to be a part of the adventure. You are, when you check in, you are given your mission to go and do in the hotel while you're there. I look forward to what that's going to be.
And you're talking about changing how these parks are designed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Magic Kingdom is definitely made for a very, very young audience. And something like, you know, Hollywood could be designed for a little bit older.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe middle-aged men. Yeah. You never know, Steve.
Sounds wonderful. I'm glad that you're back safely from Badoo.
Film at 11.
brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. You know, it is October. It is time for those independent films that sometimes slip through the cracks and sometimes have a little bit of scary spookiness to them.
Now, Steve, if you had $5 and you wanted to, say, buy a subscription to Hulu, what would I watch?
This is the month to do it. This is no doubt the month to do it. The first thing I would recommend that you watch is a movie called Little Monsters. This was released on Hulu this week, and it is the story of a washed-up musician who falls for his nephew's kindergarten teacher.
And this takes place in Wakanda, right? With Olaf?
Is there a Wakanda in Australia? Because this is an Australian film.
Oh, it is?
Yes, it is.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Uh-huh.
Must be the accents.
Right. This is Lupita Nyong'o, who, yes, you would recognize from Wakanda. She was in the Black Panther movie, and she was the star of Us last year.
Yes.
She is a fantastic actor. And then, yes, you're right, Josh Gad is also featured in this movie. He
also is from Africa, Steve.
Is he?
Yes, he was in...
He goes to Africa.
He does, and I think he was looking to...
Go to Orlando. That's ironic.
That's right. Well, they ended up going to Uganda, Steve. and they helped save a lot of people.
Josh Gad here plays a children's television star who... I didn't tell you the twist
mission,
yet.
Your mission's only 2 years, Steve.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about the Book of Mormon.
Right. Thanks for straightening that out for everyone.
Well, we were talking to people who may or may not know what we're talking about, Steve.
Orlando! Sorry. Then, suddenly, 20 minutes into this lovely movie about this guy falling in love with his kindergarten teacher, this movie takes a giant twist and becomes a comedy zombie film very similar to Shaun of the Dead or Zombieland.
Well, Steve, that's a twist.
It is. It's such a twist. My wife put this on. She saw the advertisement for this on Hulu and apparently did not read the words of what this movie was about. She put it on thinking it was a lovely story about a guy meeting a lovely teacher. When it became a zombie movie, she paused the TV. She turned to me. She goes, "What is happening? Is this a zombie movie?" I said, "Yeah, this is a zombie movie. Didn't you read the words?" She said, "No!
They're going to Salt Lake City."
By that point, we were totally sucked into this movie. We were absolutely sold on these characters. This is a fun zombie movie, very much on the level. Okay, not exactly on the level as Shaun of the Dead, but it's got that fun zombie zany horror movie strength to it.
Well, Shaun of the Dead obviously loves Queen music, but this one loves other music.
Yes. Lupita Nyong'o in this plays this kindergarten teacher with a ukulele, and she sings songs to the kids, and they sing, the little adorable little five-year-olds sing Shake It Off, the Taylor Swift song, and it's adorable. She is keeping them.
They like Taylor Swift, Steve.
Yeah, of course they do. The kids, of course, they love Taylor Swift. She is trying to keep them calm in this emergency situation. And as a kindergarten teacher, she faces situations, not exactly life-threatening situations, but all sorts of things happen in the kindergarten classroom. Mm-hmm. And she is in control of this emergency situation. This is not a great film, but it's really fun.
Okay.
This is a fun adventure to go through. I enjoyed these characters. Josh Gad, his character absolutely loses his mind in this emergency situation, and he swears up one side and down the other in front of these five-year-olds.
Well, just like Olaf does.
Like Olaf might in such a situation, just absolutely panicking. And the teacher threatens him and says, "You are going to calm down. You are going to tell the kids that this is all a game, and you are going to show a little restraint here, because I'm not going to have you going crazy." This is right up the October horror movie comedy alley that I like to live in.
So what age grade would you say this is fine for?
Oh, boy.
I mean, it's a zombie film. So, you know, we're five-year-olds, right?
It's certainly not a children's film. It is certainly not...
Yeah. A teen film?
I think that my high schooler would enjoy this film if he had time to sit around and watch
it. How about a middle schooler?
My middle schooler, I think... I think my middle schooler sat through part of it, but then didn't quite get to the fun aspect of the zombies fast enough. That's one of the big criticisms.
Not enough meat eating?
There's not... There's so many great zombie points in this. Okay. You would like this one, Chip. I'm pretty sure this is right up the Zombieland comedy route.
Steve, I'd like to recall my past. Is there a movie that possibly you saw that could recall maybe something that happened a long, long time ago?
In a galaxy far, far away.
Possibly.
Called New Jersey. There was a movie 25 years ago called Clerks. And I got to tell you, it has been a part of my life since the moment it was put together. I was working in a video store at Snoogans. The time.
Snoogans.
And yes, Jay and Silent Bob came into our lives 25 years ago. This week, Kevin Smith put out the new movie, Jay and Silent Bob Reboot. This is being distributed very, very tightly. I got to see it through Fathom Events last week.
Okay.
And now... Jay and Silent Bob, Kevin Smith, and Jay Muse are traveling the country showing this movie in small theaters.
Skinny Silent Bob.
Skinny Silent Bob, and boy does he look old, Jason Muse. That's actually a joke in the movie, is Jason Muse, when he's standing next to Kevin Smith, looks a lot older, despite the fact that he is 4 years younger than Kevin.
Really?
Yeah, he's not looking great. That's told many times in this story.
Probably a great thing to point out.
It's really a feel-good for Jason. This movie is a nostalgia trip. The premise is that this is the same story that was told 18 years ago in Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back.
You got me there, Steve.
Jay and Silent Bob found out that a movie was being made about the characters that they were the basis for, and they decided they had to go to Hollywood to stop this movie from being made. Now, fast forward 18 years, everything's being rebooted. Everything's being remade. So they hear that a new movie is being made about the characters that they were the basis for, and they decide they have to go to Hollywood to stop it. Again.
That sounds great, Steve.
It's not a terrible premise, but really storytelling-wise, this is not good storytelling. This is really kind of lazy storytelling on the part of Kevin Smith. This is a lot of navel-gazing.
Lazy storytelling and Kevin Smith?
Yeah.
Steve, when did this start?
About 13 years ago after Clerks 2. Clerks 2, in my opinion, was a good movie with good storytelling and good characters.
Pinnacle Silent Bob right there.
And after that, they've kind of... His storytelling has gone a little lazy. I don't know if that's exactly when he started smoking marijuana, but...
That would probably be it right there.
It might be right about the same time where Kevin Smith is no longer the active star that I... admired 18 years ago.
All right, Steve. You got me with two films.
Yeah.
Are there any really good films I should watch?
I did watch a good movie this week. This is a surprisingly good acting film. It's called The Man Who Killed Hitler and Then the Bigfoot.
Now, Steve, this is a film. Do they kill Hitler and do they kill a Bigfoot?
Yes, that's the story. You now know the story of this movie from the title.
You've got me interested so far.
And you would think that this would be a crummy comic book movie, a crummy little B movie, the kinds of movies that I like. This is fantastic acting and great cinematography. Sam Elliott plays the character, the main character of this story. He is 75 years old.
He's not working at the Double Deuce anymore, Steve?
No. The dude abides. He is 75 years old, and he is an active actor in this. He is doing all of these things. A lot of the story comes from flashbacks to 1940s era, where he, yes... does kill Hitler, and then he gives us a whole speech on how he did it and why he did it and how important it was to have that act happen, and then for the government to cover it up and say that Hitler killed himself when actually this guy was responsible for that act. Then the government
noted.
Then the government comes to him. The American government and the Canadian government come to this character and say, we've read your record. We know who you are. You are one of three people on the planet who are immune to this terrible disease that's being spread by this creature living in the woods in Canada. We need you, because of your skill set and your immunity, to go and remove this creature from the world before this becomes a full outbreak and kills everyone on Earth.
Now, this is also star Chewbacca.
The Bigfoot in this movie is really gross. Like, it's really sick, and the creature that they put
Chewbacca,
together...
Chewbacca's old, Steve.
Chewbacca's fit and well.
Oh,
this creature was very ill, and boy, there was a gross out moment in this movie when he's trying to kill the Bigfoot. This is a study in acting. This is a study in filmmaking. It's a very low budget film, but Sam Elliott is commanding the screen.
It sells a lot of Dodge trucks, Steve.
The dude abides. This is a good movie. I don't get hung up on the title. There is actually a line in this story where somebody says, this is not the comic book movie that you were expecting, because it's not. This is a study. This is a character study.
And this is a good film.
This is a good film.
All right,
I recommend this one.
And
it's
this
also
is,
on Hulu.
That's right. So when you get your Hulu.
Yes.
So we're giving you this foreshadow of why you need to get Hulu
time
for
get
at
Hulu.
At least for the month or
uh-huh.
so.
You got to see a documentary called Memory, The Origins of Alien. This is the story behind Ridley Scott's movie Alien, which just turned 40 this year, right?
Well, yeah. Started losing its hair, Steve.
That's what happens.
Yes, this was released just a couple weeks ago, mm-hmm. and it was one of those films I wanted to see. And I just happened to be able to watch it. We got a study on, I guess, what the genesis of this film was. And Dan O'Bannon, who was our writer of this film, grew up in Missouri,
mm-hmm.
in an area that he basically was in the middle of nowhere. They didn't have a library where he was living. And read a bunch of books, liked a lot of alien stuff, liked a lot of science fiction stuff. EC Comics and all that other fun stuff kind of led him to understand that he did not like Star Wars. He felt Star Wars was too much of a comic book type of film.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted to create something more along the lines of Lovecraft, where, you know, sort of a... This is all up, by the way, Mark Brad at Dork 40.
Yeah.
Mark would totally be a guy you could interview concerning Alien, this movie, because... All the influences that Mark always talks about for his work, I mean, they were the influences for this.
Mm-hmm.
So this love of mythology, this idea of trying to find connections from the past to today, just led to a kind of a realistic, or how about that for an alien film? More of a science-based type of alien film.
Okay.
So we get some commentary on Kubrick, Stanley Kubrick, as an influence on this too, because 2001, you remember, they're out in space. It's very, very quiet.
Mm-hmm.
Alien starts out very, very quiet. And they're on a mission, and we get some commentary of the day because of working class people not being treated real well. If you remember the two that are kind of arguing, we're not doing more work unless they pay us more. They can't do anything unless they pay us more.
Right.
So we get a little bit of that. And then we also get some of 70s type of filmmaking, in the sense that they're all sitting around the table. This is before John Hurt becomes, birth something, Steve. Anyway, they're all talking, but they're all having a conversation at the same level. And which conversation, we're the viewer, which one are we supposed to follow? And then everything kind of happens.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it stars that lady from Galaxy Quest, Steve.
Right. Sigourney Weaver, the star of Alien. And you say that there's a story to her becoming the star of this, right?
Well, this was, her part was written for a man.
Hmm.
And so she was cast in this part. And that, you know, was probably one of the great parts about this film, is that she was not, this film was not a female fighting an alien.
Right.
This was a person fighting an alien who just happened to be a female.
Right.
And Sigourney Weaver was a very strong character to be able to take this type of role. How wonderful for her at the time. And, you know, we go through H.R. Giger's set designs and how they put these things together. And all the different types of influences. And this was lifted from anything and everything you can think of.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, I think Dan O'Bannon said, you don't steal from one person, you steal from everyone. And that's where you put together this film. So there's a lot of places where you can go, that was lifted from here and lifted from there. But certainly to have a film made about it,
mm-hmm.
because it's still culturally relevant, is a good example of how important this film was.
Mm-hmm.
And the follow-up films to this, if you think of, you know, to Star Wars, you got E.T., which is another family type of film.
Right.
But for Alien, it was The Thing, John Carpenter's.
Well, and then all the other Alien sequels, Aliens,
is
sometimes seen as a better film than the original Alien.
Sure, sure.
It's a different style of storytelling, just enough that it's different.
And we had Prometheus that was just a couple years ago.
Yeah, that was not good.
Well, that was still part of the
same. Still the same.
They're drawing from the same spots. And and so we get a little bit of talk about myths and how they're deeper than stories. And, you know, because they're part of you. Somehow they're connecting with you on a different level. I really enjoyed this. I would say 65 out of 100. Certainly worthy of your time if you have interest in this film.
There you go. It's a documentary called Memory, The Origins of Alien. Opening this week, we've got some movies. Some of them might be something that we want to see. The first one is called The Current War. This is the story of George Westinghouse and Thomas Edison and Nikola Tesla trying to figure out electricity in the world.
And this stars Dr. Stephen Strange, doesn't it?
Right. That is Benedict Cumberbatch.
Oh, there you go. He's also Khan. He's...
John! Yes. Also, Spider-Man's in this one.
And it's Peter Tingle.
This is Tom Holland and Benedict Cumberbatch teaming up in a film together. We have to get this into the theater. Here's the bad news. This movie was released 2 years ago, and what we're looking at is a re-release because of that star power.
Steve, this is a director's cut, though, so you know that means it's good quality.
I'm not sure of that. I'm interested because I love the story. There's a lot of character to the story of Edison and Westinghouse and Tesla and this war that they had to solve the idea of how we were going to distribute electricity.
Well, it seems like Edison did a lot of dirty tricks, and maybe this movie talks a little bit about that.
I'm sure that it does.
Steve, are there any science fiction films for us this week?
There is, and I'm not sure about this one. It's called Portals.
The stars 2001.
The obelisk, yes.
Yes, it stars this that.
Yeah, this one, if you watch the trailer, this one's a little bit confusing. Yes, a family's driving along, and then suddenly the 2001 obelisk shows up. And apparently it's a portal to another world, and then the guy comes back, and then there's bloody people that might be zombies. I'm not quite clear on what's happening in Portals.
Steve, are there any odd movies that are about, girls finishing schools?
Yes, there's one called Paradise Hills. This is a very strange idea of taking a group of girls and making sure that they have all the rules and know what they're supposed to do in society.
Conditioning them, Steve.
Yeah. This stars Emma Roberts, Awkwafina, and Mila Jovovich.
Steve, are there any films that make us all feel uncomfortable being around police officers?
You just have a whole list this week, don't you? Yes, there's a movie called Black and Blue. This is the story of African-American police officers and trying to figure out where they fit into our society. This is a weird concept for me.
This is a movie where the bad guys and good guys are all bad guys. So anyway, there we go.
And nobody trusts anybody, and that conflict between us and them that we talk about all the time. That why are we driving a stake between us and them?
All right, Steve, are there any way to redeem me? Find me a movie that
I don't know.
Somehow has some kind of positive influence on
me. You went to Badu. I mean, my goodness, you've got to be feeling pretty good about yourself. But if you're not, you might want to watch the baseball movie Full Count. This is the story of a young man who tried to get into baseball, had a setback, and now he's trying to save the family farm, of course.
Well, Dad passed away, yeah. Steve, and all of a sudden you've got this mysterious man showing up who's going to show us how to run a farm. Ah.
It's not Bagger Vance, though. This is not Will Smith.
This looks really odd. Steve.
Speaking of odd,
Steve, this looks like a film maybe that should have been made maybe in the 70s.
Yeah, there is a movie about the historic Great Race of Mercy. The Great Alaskan Race is the title of this movie. It's about a dog sled team.
Steve, they got to save the kids.
Bringing the right.
There's only one way to do it.
Get the medicine to the kids.
They're going to have to go 700 miles, and the only way to do it is through dogs. Have those dogs mushed. Yes. 700 miles.
Yes.
Bring back the life-saving serum.
Yes. This is the story of Balto, the dog. Remember that cartoon version of this from the 80s or 90s?
No.
Yes. It's that story. Like all the Disney movies, we have to make the cartoons into live action. That's why we get the Great Alaskan Race.
Well, this one looks like a movie.
Yeah. There is a movie called The Cat and the Moon. This is kids finding themselves.
I'm feeling mellow, man. Yeah. Little morose, little depressed.
Yeah.
Would you like to go watch a film about kids making questionable decisions?
Yeah, really bad decisions and wondering about
drug use.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, well, there's that one for us, Steve.
There's that. There's a movie called Frankie, which is the story of a woman who is dying and her family comes together to celebrate her. This seems like a fine film.
It's a Sony classic, Steve. It is a Sony classic. There's certain decorum that we have. Right. Death and beautiful colors. And
we get into the horror movies because it's October. My eighth grader is interested in the movie Countdown. This is the story of an app that when you download it and open it up, it will tell you how long you have left to live.
Does this star Adam Devine, Steve?
No, unfortunately, this is not an Adam Devine.
No, this is not?
No.
So you end up downloading the app who takes over your phone and tells you when you're going to die.
Right.
And then it becomes a horror film.
And then you die.
Well, there you go.
There's your story.
You got that going for you.
This app came out last year, and I still don't know if it was a promotion for the movie or if somebody came out with this app and then somebody said, oh, that's a good idea for a movie, and they made the movie afterwards. But either way, yes, this is the 12-year-olds love this idea.
Steve, let's just say you didn't enjoy being on Paradise Hills, but you wanted to go to an acting school. Where would you go?
Well, there is the sequel to The Gallows, if that's what you're talking about. The Gallows Act 2 is opening this week. This is a Blumhouse horror film. And if you know anything about Jason Blum, you know that he is gotten really good at making very low-budget, scary movies, and this is one of those.
When Anna Rue transfers to a prestigious acting school, Steve.
Yes. Then The Gallows kicks in from the film from 2015. Yeah.
Well, look, how about HGD TV, Steve? Let's just say that we're going to fix up a house. Any horror movies for us?
There's a movie called The Girl on the Third Floor. This is a classic haunted house, a really haunted house that somebody moves into that somebody happens to be Chicago's very own CM Punk. Yeah, the wrestler is now an actor. He's handsome. My goodness, what a handsome man. I probably won't see this, but the trailer looks really good on this one, actually.
All right there, Steve. Steve, let's just say that I was going to release an album and I'm an older gentleman, and I want to be a little self-indulgent. Are there any films for me?
The self-indulgent film of the week is Western Stars. This is the live concert performance from Bruce Springsteen. Several of our listeners are big Bruce Springsteen fans, so be careful.
So Bruce is going to be driving his old pickup truck and singing in a barn about his new album. How lovely, Steve.
Good job, Bruce. But the thing that I'm really excited about this week is finally, we are getting season two of Castle Rock on Hulu. Yes.
You mean you can watch those other movies and see Castle Rock too?
It is time for you to re-up on Hulu. Those of you who let your Hulu subscription lapse, you've got 2 or 3 months of Castle Rock in front of you, season two. The critics are saying this is just as good as season one. If you didn't watch season one, you really should go revisit that first of all.
And we can watch the Cocky Doodly Show.
Yes, this is a story based on the stories of Stephen King, and this season focuses on Misery, that story that
about hobbling, Steve.
That takes place in a house where an author is being tortured and needs to write better. This is very Stephen King. I really look forward to this. The first season was so good.
And what type of paper do we need, Steve?
I don't know. Just stop hitting me, Chip.
Book it.
Brings us to our book. At our book of the week, you have been reading a book called A Gentleman in Moscow. This is by Amar Tolles, and of course it's about gentlemen, because you are famous for calling people gentlemen.
A Gentleman in Moscow, Steve. This is about a true gentleman. He was a count, Steve.
Okay.
A Count Alexander Rostov. Now, this is probably the best book I have read, I would say, in the 5 years that we've been doing this podcast.
Wow. That's huge, because we've read some really great books in the last 5 years.
Yeah, and I absolutely recommend this. This book was recommended to me by my university, and we have a book club for the alumni. And so basically we read this book and then we discuss it for, I don't know, like 3 months. I mean, it's way too long, but it doesn't really matter. This was the book that I was told to read, and I read it. And I say, very, very good.
Okay, so tell us about A Gentleman in Moscow.
All right, this is a gentleman who was down in Paris and returning to Moscow, where he is from. He's a count. So he is part of the aristocratic class. And this, if you remember a little bit of your Russian history, there was a revolution, Steve. And the revolution basically is when the Soviet Union came to be.
Okay.
And communism was up. And they basically wiped out the ruling class. When he returned to Russia, he was told that he could not leave the hotel where he was staying.
Okay.
So he lived in this hotel for 30-some years.
Wow. For 3 decades, he was only allowed to be in this hotel.
Only this hotel, Steve.
Wow.
And we've got a gentleman who was, no other way to say it, he was bred to be a leader, but bred to make these types of decisions. So he knows how to pick wines. He knows how to eat. He knows the manners of leadership.
Okay.
He is a well-educated and worldly person.
Okay.
And if you remember, we had World War I that happened because of some worldly people deciding that they should have wars. And the everyday Joes had to fight these wars, and they all died. The response to that was the Soviet Revolution. They've taken over, and we've got a whole group of people who do not have these skills running the country. So what do we know about Soviet history? This is not being addressed in this book. They're starving people. You know, they're starving people out there. What do we do? Well, we can kill them all. You know, or just let them out starve. There are people who are not happy to be part of the Soviet Union. They're killing them. So all this stuff is kind of going in the background. You're sort of seeing it a little bit, kind of playing out. But you're in a hotel. You're kind of insulated from a lot of it. And so this gentleman learns a lot more about the hotel, because a hotel is a building. And if you are a guest in the hotel, you're in certain places. But if you are a person who is, you know, having to live there all the time, we've got a little girl who brings a key who's going to show them all the places that you don't know are in this building. So when you go and pick up your mail and it's the mail room, well, there's a room that got to that mail room, right? Well, you're usually not back there. And so there are cellars and back passages and all sorts of things. And we learned a little of the history of hotels in general. Hotels of this sort were built all over the world. They are very similar, because they were meant to, when you're the aristocratic group, to go to those places. You wanted to feel at home.
Mm-hmm.
And so we learn a little bit about that. There is a little sneaking away at the end. So you have a nice little bow tie of the end. But what you're really doing is you learn a little bit of the insides of a gentleman who was trained to be a gentleman, some of the challenges they ended up having. I don't know if you leave incredibly sympathetic to this person.
Okay.
I mean, if you realize the ruling class was the reason why we had the rise of communism and all the suffering that those people had under a centrally planned economy. The foods, you know, the abundance that they had available to them wasn't available to the general class, but certainly was available to him. And all that kind of comes into play. What else do you want to know about this?
Well, tell me why this is such a good book. Is it the characters? Is it the situations? What makes this your favorite book of the last 5 years?
Well, I think part of it is I have a good knowledge of the Soviet Union history. I mean, as I shouldn't say I'm not an expert in it. I've taken a class in it. And I've read some of it and stuff like that. So I know what's going on back there. What I also recognize is how it changes people. So I have knowledge on and what communism does to the everyday Joe. At one time you had thoughts and now you don't have thoughts. In fact, there is a good story of where Count was having dinner, and there was a young couple having dinner, and they didn't know which wine to order, and the Soviets had placed in a waiter who wasn't really skilled at being a waiter. So the Count leans over and introduces himself and suggests a wine. Well, that offended the waiter. So a year later, down in the cellar, they decided through decree that there's only two types of wine, Steve. There's red wine and there's white wine. Mm-hmm. There's not all those different varieties with all the different nuances.
Taking away all the choice.
Correct.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you have no choice.
Mm-hmm.
You have two. It's red or white. Well, to some people who don't have a lot of knowledge of the nuances, that could be perfectly fine. That, you know, simplifying is fine to mm-hmm. do that. And maybe you think that for a person who has all that knowledge, maybe it's sort of an esoteric knowledge that certainly, maybe it doesn't mean anything. Or maybe it's a little snooty or something of that nature. Well, for a person who has that, you know, that's just part of their life, but you've just taken away their ability to use their specialized knowledge.
That individuality.
Well, yeah. And I go back and forth on this because, you know, once again, even though he was trained to be in the ruling class, he's the reason they had the revolution.
Mm-hmm.
It was his, you know, his gentry, his group that made things intolerable for and forced a revolution. So, you know, the American experience is certainly much more forgiving.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's not on Count's level of knowledge. But certainly, we're getting some insights of, you know, he's a good guy. He's a regular person who has this beautiful training that we all wish we had. We'd all love to know the right formality for any occasion.
Mm-hmm.
But on the same note, it can be for a certain group of people just intimidating and, you know, but, you know, errors or something of that nature.
It might seem superfluous. I talk about etiquette every once in a while with my students, and I don't talk about it like knowing which fork to use etiquette, but the kind of etiquette where the conversation that you're having with your grandma is different than the conversation that you're having with your other 12-year-old friends. There's a different way of doing things depending on who is in the room with you.
Well, I'm using etiquette as an example because it is certainly a distinguishing factor of the Count's training and what he does ultimately to train a girl. But we also can look at his life on things that you could do to improve yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the Soviet workers who needs to understand how the West works comes to him and the Count tutors him on, you know, how do people in Paris think? How do people in London think? How do Americans think?
Mm-hmm.
And tries to bring them up to speed. Because if you can imagine, this is not any different than what the Chinese are doing right now. And you can see it in maybe in films. You know, all of a sudden they're like, well, we've got all these great actors who may have been very popular a long time ago. they're starring in these wild films. You're going, well, why are they there? Mm-hmm. Well, because the Chinese have dollars. They want to make films. And, you know, they're kind of learning what would appeal to Americans or what they think would appeal to Americans, but they may not have first knowledge. So ultimately, this is a true story.
Mm-hmm.
There are multiple parts to this story. So they call them books inside there. That you will go through, say, a 30, 35-year period with him as he has to adjust mm-hmm. to a life where he had the world at his basically available to him, and now he only has this hotel. And I tell you what, I absolutely fell into it, and I would recommend it with my highest recommendation. I think that if this is a grown-up story, I think that children could certainly, you could read it to a family if you wanted to, but mm-hmm. I think most people, if they got into it, would find that it's accessible enough and certainly interesting enough.
Intriguing. I am intrigued by this one. It's called A Gentleman in Moscow by Amor Tolles, and you can find it on our Amazon store, amazon.toomuchscrolling.com.
Appetite.
Brings us to our appetite, our app of the week. You got back from Baidu, and then you went to St. Petersburg, which is not in Russia.
St. Petersburg, not in Russia. The other St. Petersburg.
Oh, the other St. Petersburg.
In Florida.
In Florida. And you were there, and you got a chance to go to the Dolly Museum.
I did.
And they have an app for your experience in the Dolly Museum. Tell us all about it.
All right, so many art museums have apps, or many museums have apps now.
Mm-hmm.
And the Dolly Museum, this is a very large collection. In fact, it may be the second largest collection of Dolly works in the world.
Okay.
And I should just tell you a little bit about this museum. This museum is in St. Petersburg. It's right off the water. And all the works are on the third floor, Steve. Why would they be on the third floor?
I don't know. Why are they on the third floor?
Well, there are hurricanes that come through, Steve. Mm-hmm. And if a hurricane is going to come through St. Petersburg, they have the ability to close the doors upstairs, and mm-hmm. the museum becomes a vault
that
for all those
sense.
Works. So this this museum was established from a gentleman, in fact, it was a family in Cleveland who just happened to buy a Dolly because they liked it. They used to hang up in their house. And anyway, they just started, they bought it from a buyer at one time, and then they became friends with Dolly and started buying directly from Dolly. They became friends with Dolly. So the museum is based on the works of this family. So they have an app, and they have a collection of very, very large prints. Those television video screens they have at the end of football stadiums.
The Jumbotrons?
Yes. They're about the size of those.
Wow.
They're massive. So
that is a large piece of art.
So Dolly's, they have regular small paintings that he's done, but he also did massive pieces. And the presentation they have now, the collection they have that they brought in from all over the world, there's probably 13, 14 of these paintings that are in the museum, and this app is your key to them. Because Dolly is a surrealist, Dolly is an illusionist, Dolly's a very special type of painter. There's mm-hmm. lots of stuff is going on. So what you end up doing is you take your app, you open it up, you place the camera towards the picture,
uh-huh.
and then the painting becomes alive.
So on the app, we've got an augmented reality thing going on where we're
Absolutely.
Seeing stuff moving that was static on the picture.
So Goya was his girlfriend.
Okay.
And the picture with it is Abraham Lincoln. I don't know if you've seen it. It's a bunch of squares. It doesn't really matter. But if you're standing a long way away, it looks like Abraham Lincoln. You get close and it's Goya, his girlfriend.
Huh.
And you would never know this, but she was a model for it. She was 82 when he painted that. It was from 1976.
Okay.
Anyway, she is standing there, and then she dives into the water in front of you.
In the app.
That's right. And then there are different things going on in the painting, and if you move it towards those things, it will either move or it will tell you something about what's going on there.
Wow.
And where he inspired. Truly an incredible use of technology on something. I mean, think about it. Your art museum, you're hanging paintings on the wall. For some people, that would sound very boring.
Mm-hmm.
how do you keep multiple people entertained with this? He truly is a master of painting.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is a very, very wonderful use of technology.
And there's certainly some artistry to the app as well, where they are adding art to this art piece.
Sure, sure.
Where some creative person put this together. This sounds fantastic.
It is. That's the reason why it's our app of the week, mm-hmm. because they did such a great job.
I think it would be even better if it was, you know, instead of your phone being held up, if we had the augmented reality glasses that we've been waiting for so many years.
Are you foreshadowing our next section of our show?
I think I might be.
Scroll with it.
Brings us to our scroll with it. Continuing our story, the last time on Too Much Scrolling.
Exactly.
Continuing our story, this experience that you had at the Dali Museum was augmented even further when you got into the virtual reality portion.
Absolutely. You got in line and you sat down in a chair. And what you were able to do is put an Oculus Rift on,
mm-hmm.
which is, you want to describe what that is?
It is one of the top virtual reality helmets available to the general public today.
Mm-hmm.
It is self-contained. You don't need an extra computer to have a virtual experience. You are completely in a different world in this virtual reality.
Very much Star Trek. I mean, mm-hmm. in the
holodeck?
Yeah, in the holodeck.
Yeah.
So when you put this helmet on, you can look 360 degrees. You can look up and down, left and right. Mm-hmm. You can turn around. And the way it kind of works in this is there are dots around. And if you focus on a dot, it will take you to that part.
Okay.
So the purpose of the Dali Museum's version of this is you're in one of Dali's surrealist paintings. And
wow.
If you haven't seen one of his paintings, they are wild dreamscapes. I mean, uh-huh. that's what they really are. And you are going to put this on and you travel around it. So there is the original Dali painting that they're using, but there were people who had to design what is inside that tower and what how would this look if you were looking up mm-hmm. the painting as opposed to straight to that painting. So, well, what a wonderful dream world this is. There was one part you had to go into this tower, and there's Alice Cooper there, who
really?
Is yellows and greens and reds, certain very surreal type of look, and there's music playing. So I guess if you got rid of your touch, because you're using your eyes,
okay.
and you got rid of taste and
right.
smell.
Don't I mean, taste Alice Cooper.
No, but my point is you're getting a lot of the
almost,
senses
yeah.
They're going around. And you can see where, boy, Dali just would be such a good artist to use
mm-hmm.
these types of tools on and explore.
And that's one thing that we've questioned about the technology of virtual reality is where can we go with this? Is it just gaming? This is one of the ways that we could use mm-hmm. virtual reality to make art.
Absolutely. And just so you know, Dali has passed away, but he would be all into this.
Yeah.
He would totally say, yes, we're going to do this. And he just certainly, his works just are wonderful, playful dream areas where you can go and use it. So things are moving in this reality. You can go up. There's these huge, huge spires. You can look down.
Wow.
I mean, it is really, really nice. And, you know, this same type of technology is being used on, like, at Disney, Smuggler's Run.
Right.
And used for, like, the Avatar over at Animal Kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
This is technology, but they're using it just a little differently.
It's amazing to think what we can do. And I think you're right. Salvador Dali was the kind of artist who was commercial and would love this use of technology.
Sure. He worked with Disney. He designed automobiles. And he made pieces of art, too. So he certainly was, you know, had no problem being commercial.
Uh-huh.
In fact, one of the real interesting pieces they also have is a virtual reality of him.
Yeah.
And he will come, he's the picture, think of a big television screen, maybe as tall as you are.
A monolith.
Yes, exactly, Steve. Where an ad would be, maybe at the mall or something like that. Anyway, he's painting in the background in the dark, and he gets up and walks towards the screen, and he's going to interact with you a little bit.
Wow.
You can't interact back with him.
Okay.
But he will talk to you and tell you a story, maybe something that inspired him to paint, maybe a thought he had on what it means to be an artist. Wow. And it looks just like him. So it certainly is a wonderful use of the technology. And that same technology is being used in movies right now. You know, it de-ages people, or maybe Princess Leia shows up someplace where she was not around to show up.
Hope.
Exactly. That's Hope. She says one word. The difference, though, is that Dolly is the video we saw. He looked great, didn't he?
He looks great. I mean, after all these years of being dead, he really looks great.
But if you can imagine, could you live forever, Steve? Well, yeah. you could live forever in this type of situation.
Artists are certainly always striving to have something that lives on after them.
Sure, and using your writings, your quips, your insights. But presenting them as yourself, as opposed to the pages of a book,
right?
Certainly may have a bigger meaning to someone. I could easily see Disney using this to have Walt Disney tell stories and stuff like that.
His mustache was a little different, but
he would never be smoking, Steve.
No, he would not.
And Dolly has these massive, massive mustaches.
Yes, he does.
That does show out there.
Awesome.
Dolly had a love for mathematics. He had a love for art. And certainly a whimsical nature of things. What a wonderful museum, and what wonderful use of technology.
So you recommend a trip down to St. Petersburg to the Dolly Museum?
Well, Steve, if you're going to go Smuggler's Run, you might as well take an hour trip.
Awesome. That's the Dolly Museum. You can find all of their information at thedolly.org and find out about those artists. That's great stuff. I don't know, Chip. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think?
Only if we can come back next week, Steve.
I think so. As long as, you're going to be here, not on a distant planet, far, far away.
Oh, no. I've got plenty of meetings here.
We've got coming up next week.
Halloween
is coming next week. I'm excited.
It's getting spooky.
We're going to have some fun next week. If you need any more information, give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-4104-TMS. Our website is TooMuchScrolling.com. Our email is TooMuchScrolling@gmail.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. We're on iTunes and Stitcher and TuneIn Radio. And you can always ask your smart speaker to play the latest episode of Too Much Scrolling. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
And I'm Sunburnt Chip Hassenblur.
We'll see you in the future. In a galaxy far, far away.